You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. How do? In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Rissa August. This is the 62nd episode, which means it's about the 60th or 61st interview. Each one is about change, decisions, and choices. Sometimes these are choices and changes we make intentionally because we want to. And other times this happens because we are faced with adverse circumstances. Rissa's story is a little bit of both. Very close together, she got a super tough health diagnosis, and also her marriage was falling apart. What Rissa and I talk about is her introspection, her thinking about this, and also her resilience. What did it mean to live? And just by chance, because super fun, we also get to talk about Ironman Triathlon, which is one of my favorite things to talk about. And I promise that I didn't plan that out in advance, although it is one of my favorite topics. And we talk about donuts. We talk about donuts too. Are you ready? I'm ready. Let's do this. Rissa August, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
I'm so grateful to be here, Amy. Thank you.
I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
I am. Yes.
That is really good. That is really good. So you probably know this from listening to other episodes, but I start almost all of my interviews asking people what part of the world they're in, where they're talking to me from. Where are you today?
I am based in Colorado. And I say based because I love travel. I love culture. I love experiencing things I've never experienced before. And so I base myself in Colorado, but I travel any chance I get.
Fantastic. I love travel too. I do. So I love to learn about people's personal backgrounds before we dive into the topic of the day. So this is a super general question. You have a lot of leeway. I start out with something super broad, but tell us as little or as much as you want about yourself outside of work, maybe outside of your family, but could be your family, could be the names of your pets, favorite plants, whatever you want us to know about you.
Hey, gosh. Well, I grew up outside of Cleveland, Ohio, and I felt like I was an old soul trapped in a young person's body. And so as soon as I turned 18, I kind of set out into the world. And I've just been a genuinely curious, explorative, adventurer person my entire life, it seems. And I genuinely love to connect with other people, other humans, and figure out and understand why and how they tick, you know, how they operate in the world. And so that led me to traveling to many other countries and living in various places and staying curious and never wanting to stop learning.
Very fun. So what is Cleveland where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is?
It is, yes.
Okay. That's good. I'm not an expert on Cleveland, but I try to remember that Cleveland is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then Cincinnati is the Chili, Skyway Chili, right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. All right. Got to keep these are very important things to know.
Very important
trivia facts for me to keep track of. The other thing that is, I think, in Ohio that I haven't done yet is Cedar Point, the roller coaster park.
Yes.
That is on my to-do list.
Yes.
It is on my to-do list. So those are the three things I know about Ohio. Now we can proceed to the topic of the day. You proposed the topic, and I don't have a lot of information about this, so I'm excited to see where this goes. Getting a life-altering diagnosis and the dissolution of your 18-year marriage, and you describe these things as happening simultaneously. That's a lot. Is that what you want to talk about today?
Yes, let's dive in.
All right, very good. So now I know everything about this that I know. And so my first question is to try and get a little more details. Do you mind sharing a little more? Let's start with the diagnosis. Like what was going on with your health?
Yeah, so I'd have to say about 7 years prior to my diagnosis, I started noticing changes in my body that I couldn't explain. And I was an athlete, I was an Ironman athlete, very rigid in my lifestyle, my health, my fitness. And it seemed like no matter what I did, I would gain weight, or I'd be extremely tired all the time. I had unexplained hair growth and bone spurs popping up under my skin, around my body. Just very bizarre, unusual things were happening. And I kept going to my doctor saying, "Hey, I notice these things are happening." And, thank God for Google. I researched it and I'm pretty sure it's my thyroid. And I kept going back to thyroid, but my blood work would come back normal. And my doctor kept telling me, "I'm not worried. You're healthy. You're an athlete. You're fine. Your blood work's fine. Everything's normal." And this happened, this was like a 7 year stretch. So I continued on, racing. I got really into CrossFit, but I continued growing. And finally, 7 years later, I had these severe headaches that I didn't matter what I did, I couldn't get rid of. I would sleep maybe 2 hours a night if I could. And again, went back to my doctor and I said, "I think something's wrong. Can we get a brain MRI? I have these headaches I can't get rid of. I'm not sleeping." And she said, "No." She said, "You're probably overtraining or not drinking enough water. I'm not worried." And I said, "No." I said, "You know what? I hope it comes back clean and clear. But for peace of mind, I want an MRI." And she said, "No" again.
Wow.
Yes. And she said, "No, I don't think you need one. And, you should look at your training regimen and your diet." And she said, "Besides, they're expensive."
Okay, so 7 years you've been dealing with this. Wow. Okay, and so then at 7 years, did you get somebody to tap into it and tell you what they thought it was?
Yeah, so after that third time, I said, "Order me the MRI." I stopped asking and I was like, "Do
Okay.
it." And she did. She turned around. I'll never forget. She turned around facing her desk and started typing and she was shaking her head and she's like, "Okay, I don't think you need one." And then not 2 weeks later, I had a one sentence email from her saying, "You have an enlarged pituitary. Go see an endocrinologist." And that was the start of that journey for me. And I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know what really an endocrinologist did. But it turned out I had a massive tumor at the base of my brain, engulfing my pituitary gland and causing a rare disease called acromegaly, which essentially destroys the body over time.
Wow. Okay, that is definitely a life-altering diagnosis. I agree with that synopsis. Wow, that is quite the story. So, before we dig in, I have a couple. I am also an Ironman triathlete, so we have that in common. How many Ironman triathlons did you do?
Two. I was on my way to my third one
And
when
then you got
I
this.
got diagnosed. Yeah.
Which races did you do?
I did Tempe and Boulder.
I did Boulder in 2016.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I did it in 2017. Yeah.
There you go. So
That's amazing.
that's
Oh,
a
I got a unicorn.
beautiful, yeah. It was. So I come from the flatlands, and it's not. So that was a tough bike course for me because of the altitude and the dryness. It
Yeah,
was
wow.
not
Both
possible
two.
for me to figure out how to get enough fluid into my body, but I did get through it. So congratulations to that. Okay, so now on to, because it's impossible for two Ironman triathletes to be in the same space and not have that conversation. So excuse us, all the audience who doesn't care, but we have to have it. We have to do that. It's a rule. You may not know it's a rule, but it's actually a rule. So you get this diagnosis, which must have been really, really jarring, because at least it sounds jarring. What, how are you doing that? Can I ask how you're doing now? Like, was there a treatment course that you were able to like treat it, and are you healthy now, or what happens with this?
Well, there wasn't a lot of answers out there, but they couldn't. So I had brain surgery. They couldn't get the entire tumor, and I went on to have radiation treatment, which is supposed to work over time. It appears to not be. It's working for all the things it shouldn't be working for. You know, we know how toxic radiation can be, and so unfortunately, it's having its own impact, and it's not helping for what it's supposed to be helping, which is shrinking the remaining tumor that's left. So I am still fighting the good fight. Yeah.
All right. So I will throw in positive vibes as you continue to go through that. How long ago was this that you got the diagnosis?
I was diagnosed at the end of 2018, and treatment, like surgery, started January 2019, and then followed by treatment.
So you've been going through this quite a bit. It's been quite the journey.
Yes.
So now let's talk about your, so you were married quite a long time. 18 years. That's not a short marriage, longer than normal. Average length of a marriage in the United States these days is 12 years. Long marriage, but so your marriage, was it already in the process of breaking apart before you got the diagnosis, or how did that? So I don't know anything about you, but I'm trying to figure out the timeline here.
So I would say for me, the marriage started dissolving the year before my diagnosis. I started reflecting on the marriage and like things I didn't care about in the past. I started like, wait a minute, wait, hold on a minute here. And I started really thinking about what I wanted in life. And then the diagnosis kind of propelled me, you know, like, and even further into that reflection, and okay, the time is now. What do you want? It was always what everyone else wanted, kind of thing. You know,
Yeah.
that pattern we get stuck in of taking care of everyone else and putting everyone else first. And I think I was like, wait a minute, whose life am I living?
So I've had the opportunity to talk to a couple of people who've had really jarring experiences that throw this into just extreme focus, right? You know, we go through, I'm not an expert. This is not something that I am qualified to really speak on, but it's like we're going through life assuming that we have all the time in the world to do all of the things. And there's always going to be more time. There'll be time to figure out the relationship. There'll be time to do more races, so on and so forth. And so this experience that you're describing of having the information come forward that throws that really into question. We don't know how much time there is, right? Or we suddenly feel like there may not be any more time. That the following that with introspection and it's going to be now, like I need to focus on myself now, is a thread that follows through several of these conversations. It's a motivation to do the things right now. So I think that that is something that I've heard from other people. And I think that's common and the introspection. So when your marriage dissolved, at the same time as this diagnosis, I'm curious how you would describe it now, how that felt. Like, was it more stress to the situation? Was it more pressure? Or was it like, okay, let's get this out of the way so that I can focus on this other thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it was a little of both. There were moments where I felt like for the first time in my life, I needed someone to hold me and carry me, and I didn't have that, and I wanted that so badly. And then there was also this feeling of, because I don't get that or receive that from this person, like I just rather you not be around. It's almost like it just stresses me out more, or is a reminder of like what I'm craving and missing in my life. And so, you know, my husband at the time, he was great at taking care of the necessities, what needed to happen. But suddenly I'm thrown into this really big emotional, you know, I went through my life priding myself how I can compartmentalize my emotions, you know, and now all of a sudden, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I started doing all this personal work on myself, and emotions started emerging for what feels like the first time I actually started acknowledging them. And I wanted someone to hold that space for me to be able to express those. And I didn't have that in my marriage. So it was like, on one hand, thank you for taking care of the shopping list and the chores and but who, like, where I need someone to hold me when I'm crying or exhausted or in a negative space. And so it was just like this little of both of like, oh, I'd rather not have you around, and thank you for doing what you can do, what you have the capacity to do.
So what I think I hear you saying is that you had not needed this person in your life to really be an emotional support system during most of your marriage. So that was not something that was a huge part of your relationship. And then you would have liked to have had that while you were going through this very, very tough treatment and emotional real path. But you were holding both of those things. Like you wish you had had it, but you also did not think that it would have been there even if the relationship was still intact.
Yes. And it's like that quote, is it Albert Einstein, who's like, you can keep doing the same thing and but what is it, and expecting a different result or something, like you can't
Yes.
keep, doing the same thing expecting a different result or
So
something.
to do the same thing and expect a result is the definition of insanity or something like that.
Right. And so I think I kept it. Oh, okay. Well, he'll just see how, I'm not my usual peppy, like, energetic self. And it just wasn't that way. I had to, I had to stop expecting a different result from the same situation. And yeah, so.
So that does sound to me as an outsider, as someone who's just meeting you for the first time today, like a lot to go through all at the same time. You shared on your intake form that this is what gave you the opportunity to reflect on your life. And so then I'm curious about the time frame. Was that something that started happening right away, or was it something that sort of seeped into your life that you began to be very reflective and look at the things that were going on?
Yes. Well, it started happening rather quickly. I was someone who always thought I didn't need anybody else, and all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute. I would like some support. Like I said, I started finding my voice, like with that doctor. I started like having the courage to put my needs and wants out there. And so, the old Rissa, just like right after surgery and treatment, was like, well, I'm just going to get back to my life. I don't have time for this, and I have racing to do. And I think I scheduled a 250-mile bike ride after my surgery. I thought I'd be up on my bike in no time, and my surgeon looked at me like I had two heads. And all of a sudden I could barely get off the couch, and that's when it sunk in. It's like a moment. I was confined to these horrible tattered gray sweatpants where they were all worn out at the hem, and I was on this couch day after day. I could barely function. And that was the turning point for me. That's when I was like, no, I can't live this way.
So that's really interesting. All right. So there's a singular moment where you remember being on the couch, specific to the gray sweatpants that you hold in your mind, that this was the moment that you're like, this cannot go forward. I do. So were you, let's talk about and you can tell me to buzz off if this is too personal. So you went, your marriage was, were you divorced before the surgery, or was your husband still living with you and you were still together while you were going through the immediate recovery?
Yes, we were still together, but it was almost like that was on hold, and I was focusing on this, but I had like other caretakers. So he might leave town for a couple of weeks for work or for a job, and I would have other people come in and help me, cook meals or
Yeah, no, let's talk about that level of support. So, but you guys had made the decision. You knew the relationship was stepping down. But let's talk about the support that you had. Like, what kind of support was there for you? We've talked a little bit about the support from your husband, but what other support was around during the diagnosis, the immediate treatment, the recovery, the long-term treatment? What kind of support have you had?
Yes, I think I started realizing that people actually do care about me. And so friends did start stepping up, and I had one friend who stayed with me 2 weeks after I got out of the hospital. And I had they went through, I'm going to get a little gross here for a moment, if that's okay. They went in through my nose for the surgery, and so I had constant blood drainage, and I would wake up and it would just be caked all over my face, and she would like heat up water, and with a Q-tip, because I couldn't have any trauma to that area, so she had to like painstakingly with a Q-tip every morning clean this caked dried blood off my face. Every morning she'd heat water to do that, and just took care of meals, and made sure my dogs could be with me on my bed, and it was so comforting to just have that, which felt like was the first time in my life I ever really had that.
Was
So
it hard? Did it feel, I mean, you didn't have a choice because you were unable to do these things on yourself, but do you remember if it was intellectually, like academically, did you have a little bit of emotional struggle with allowing this level of support into your life?
very much, absolutely. I'm usually the one that takes care of other people, and I think I probably didn't ask enough for help, because in my brain, where I tend to live too more than I like to admit, is well, everyone's busy with their lives. Nobody has time to come take care of me or do this. And then I would invite people over. They'd be like, "Can I help? Can I bring dinner or something?" And I'd say, "Sure, come over." But then I'd cook them dinner. It's like I've really struggled with relinquishing my desire to control.
And to receive support and
Receive.
assistance, and so it's not always easy. It's not always easy. I have a very clear memory of my dad when I was a kid, just being very direct with me when somebody gave me a compliment. It might have been him, I don't even remember. But the thing, part about it I remember is I was waffling and pushing back and not accepting it. My dad just looked at me and he said, "Say, accept it and say thank you." And I was like, "Oh, that's it. That's what we do." And I will remind myself of that when people will offer to do things, accept it and say thank you. Thank you very much. I received this from you. Yeah, it's a hard, I think it can be very, very hard. So, how long would you say? So, you begin this process of reflection. You are going through a period of your life where you are being forced to really come to terms with accepting kind of a lot of support from the people around you, and you're very lucky to have it, which is there. How long would you say you were in this reflective period?
Oh gosh, I feel like I'm still in it. I feel like it never ends. Just when you get to one point, then it, the next thing comes. It's like the next wave or the next thing, and
Yeah, that's the, yeah, if you're still in it, like it was the beginning of something that hasn't ended yet. I think that makes sense. So, how would you define or describe how these two simultaneous changes in your life, which really, I don't know if you've ever seen it. Sometimes people break apart like the main categories of life into 6 or 8 or 10 different categories, and you've got like health and profession and relationships and that, recreation. But this really, like health and your relationship, those are two of the big ones. To have two giant changes in those two portions of your life, that's a pretty, I think that sounds like a lot going on. What would you say are some of the ways your life has changed as a result of those two big transitions?
yes, my gosh, where do I begin?
Yeah, pick one. Yeah.
I
Pick one.
mean, they were really, I have to say, this idea of leaving my husband was actually harder and heavier for me than this brain tumor I had. And, I I just couldn't fathom my life without the plan I had, created for it. But now I see it all as a gift. And so I mean, this really propelled me on to do all the things I've been putting on hold or on the back burner. I pulled out my dusty bucket list and I was like, the time's now. So I started doing all the things now. And the first thing I actually signed up for on that day in those tattered gray sweatpants was an 1800-mile bike journey from Canada to Mexico.
Oh,
And
nice. All right, along the West Coast?
yes,
Yeah,
down the
yeah.
coast.
So that's amazing. Okay. I have a very old friend who the race she got into Ironman was it didn't even happen to her, but she saw something very dramatic happen in front of her. She did not know how to swim at the time. And she legitimately, that shift, just that one little piece that she had seen something happen, she went home and registered for a race and signed up for Learn to Swim lessons. And so the idea that this shift would cause you to like pull things out and get out the checklist and start checking them off, I think says a lot about you as a person who likes to get things done. Did you actually have a bucket list? I'm super curious about this. Like, did you have somewhere in your like journal of your life, did you have a list of things that you dreamed of doing, or did you have to make one?
I did have a list. Some of it was mental, but I did have a list in my journal, and I really want to add this part. A lot of other people started to put constraints on me that I started to believe,
Okay,
and
after.
so. After, we're always put in roles. We're always put in these different roles, and like you were always this person, and now you're this person, and so you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that, and that was really helpful to propel me toward, well, wait a minute, I get to make that decision. I get to choose how I move forward, and I choose life. I don't mean to sound over dramatic, but I choose to live, and that's why I pulled out my bucket list and started checking things off. It's never ending bucket list because I keep adding to it all the time and doing things I never even thought I would be doing. So it's great.
And so what the first thing you decided to do was an 1800-mile bike trip. Was this a solo packing trip? Like, was it just you and a tent going down from Canada or Mexico, or were you part of a tour or a group, or how did you put that together?
Yeah, I did what was called a semi-supported tour. So there was a van that hauled about mine and nine other
Oh,
people's
that's the
gear.
way to do it. Oh,
Yes.
so much more pleasurable than carrying all your gear.
Yeah, I had a lot of medications to think about, and my body wasn't operating the way it used to, so I didn't. This was my first thing post treatment and diagnosis. I had no idea how my body was going to respond.
Yeah.
And so I felt more comfortable signing up with a tour, but that turned out to have its own challenges.
Sure.
And but I it was so gratifying. I did go on to Spain to do I did a solo tour across northern Spain, and now I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna do it with a group from here on out, because I just realized the with the connection being one of my top values, like how important just having that connection and all the opportunities to have this experience with other people was way more fun and profound.
That's amazing. That's a terrific thing. I love that you had an actual bucket list. I had a list. I don't know where it is now, but I mean, at some point when I was in college, they had us make a list that I like sat down and like made a list, and then it came up, like I found it in like a box when I was in my 20s. I was like, look at this, you know? And, but I find that not everybody has that. Many years ago, I don't know how many years ago, there was a movie actually named Bucket List with Morgan
Oh.
Freeman and somebody else, Jack Nicholson maybe. And they went through and they were working through their bucket list. And the only reason I bring that up is that I, when it came out, I remember talking to people, and you could very easily tell that there were two categories of people: people who loved this concept of having a list and working through it, and other people who were quite on the other spectrum, who almost felt like that was, you know, not fun for them, and they didn't, their brain just didn't work that way. And so that's the reason I thought of asking you for that. So that is really exciting. And so you have an ongoing list, choosing to live, moving on through your life, working through the health diagnosis and continuing treatment. And we're all with you hoping that that works out really, really well. You can really tell that your perseverance must be perseverance and grit. You've definitely got that in spades.
Yeah, I again, conscious decision to live, and that means all of it. I don't expect every day to be rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, it would
Well,
get boring, probably. I mean, I'd be
yeah.
willing to try it, but I think it'd get boring.
Yeah, and there's things I can't, I'll no longer be able to do another Ironman race. Physically, I can't. But you know, for example, I stopped, I've gotten rid of all of those constraints, right? And those limiting beliefs. And so, for example, I always wanted to do the Camino de Santiago in Spain, but
Right.
I knew physically I couldn't hike far like that anymore. I couldn't, my body has changed so much. But I was like, wait a minute, I can still bike. So
Yeah.
I went on to bike the Camino last year, and it challenged me on every level. And a lot of people are like, well, how was your trip? And I was like, it's the hardest thing I ever did. And honestly, it challenged me in every way. And it kind of sucked. And they're like, oh, do you regret going? And I'm like, no way. I said, when I chose to live that day on the couch, like that meant everything. That meant all of it.
How often does the mental memory of the tattered sweatpants and sitting on the couch, now that that's a little bit in the past, how often do you still refer to that as like an anchor moment? Like, how often do you think of it as a motivation to keep going and keep doing different things?
Oh, that's a great question, and I feel myself a little emotional over it. I still use it today because, I created a mantra in those sweatpants, and I was so focused on what I can't do. I was so focused on who I no longer was, what wasn't going to be possible anymore, and I started asking myself, well, what can I do? And I created a mantra using the word can, capable, able, now. What am I capable, able to do now in this moment? And that was my sweatpants moment when I started asking myself, what can I do? And let me tell you, some mornings are like, well, I can get up and brush my teeth.
Wow.
And then some mornings I'm actually out for like a walk or a bike ride or having dinner with friends, and it's the best day ever. So it's still a driving force in my
Still a
life.
driving force. And then it sounds to me, and I'll just recap it to make sure, and I could get it wrong, but that part of this is when all you can do on that day is brush your teeth. To really own it, that this is what I can do today. And so this is living right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. Oh my goodness. Okay, so in a minute we're going to do final questions. This is the most abrupt segue of the day. But I do want to give you a chance to talk to people about what you do and how people can find you online.
Yes, well, you can find all things Rissa at my website, rissaaugust.com, and that's Rissa with one S, RISA, August, just like the month. And I am a coach that helps guide people through navigating their own limiting beliefs, an author, a speaker. I'm such a passion for speaking, and I travel the country doing that. And I also have some fun little side gigs. I sparkle hair and
I
let
think I can see that. Not everybody would see it, but I think I can see the floss, the sparkly floss in your hair. Very nice. Okay,
Yeah.
sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. Go on,
Oh,
go on.
okay. It's just simply, I do it because it brings so much joy and including to myself, I just love it. And Women's World Magazine actually did an article about me on my hair sparkles. So you can listen to my interviews, speaking, all things Rissa at rissaaugust.com.
Fantastic. So that link will be in the show notes. And also for anybody who subscribes at imperfectadulting.com, we send it out and then you can just click on it. That's the easiest way to always be informed on the amazing guests and anything they have to offer. So I highly recommend it. But that's me. All right. Now it's time, Rissa. Are you ready? We're going to do the last three questions. These are rapid fire. They're not meant to stress you out. They're just meant to be fun. Say whatever comes to mind when I ask the questions. Okay. All right. So, do you use your phone to take photos? And if so, what do you think is the last thing that you took pictures of?
Oh, yes, I do use my phone to take photos. And the last thing I took a picture of was probably I was just in Nashville doing a talk, and it was the Johnny Cash Museum.
Okay.
And I think it was one of his actually original gold records.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Do you spend a lot of time in Nashville? Have you been there before?
It was the second time I've been there, and so I haven't spent a lot of time there, no.
I was there and I did it was I didn't I was there and I was by myself, but I was with a group, and so we did one of the hop on hop off buses, which was kind of fun, which was kind of fun. I'd never done that before, so that was fun, except it was insanely hot. Insanely hot, so we were sweating it out, but it was a good way to see all the fun things and the goofy announcers. Fun, fun, fun. All right. What is your favorite type of weather?
Oh, I'd have to say mild, like not too hot, not too cold, sunny with maybe a few marshmallow clouds speckling the sky, and then a slight warm breeze.
For some reason in this conversation, I keep coming up with movie references. I don't know what that is. Did you ever see Miss Congeniality, where it's the beauty contest and they ask, and what's your favorite date? And they mean like a romantic date, but she says something like April 15th, because it's not too hot, but you can wear a sweater. So when you gave me that response, that is the scene that came to my mind. I don't know why I have so many movie references in this interview, but I'm going with it. All right. Now, final. Do you prefer sweet or salty snacks? And do you want to share your favorite snack with us?
Oh my gosh. Well, I actually lost my taste and smell through my surgery. But I can taste salt, and I can taste when something's sweet. But when I donuts, like I'd never eat them, but if I'm gonna indulge and just get a little crazy, I'm gonna get me a donut.
One of the like a plain like glazed donuts, or one of the fancy donuts that
Probably
has
like a Long John, like
oh,
with the cream inside. Yeah.
the cream inside. There's when they get the cream right, when it's a donut that's stuffed with the cream inside and it's the right sort of like texture and freshness and the difference in the temperature, that's a lot of fun, I will
It's
admit.
got to be the right ratio too. Yes, agreed. Very
Yeah,
much.
and people probably have different preferences about this, but I was thinking about this the other day because I was watching something where there was a picture of somebody biting into like a Boston cream donut, and I was thinking, you know, that's hit or miss. You know, it can be delightful,
Agreed.
or you know, sometimes just like, oh, that wasn't what I was expecting. You know, so there you go. That's it, Rissa. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you, Amy. What a pleasure. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.